So this morning we're going to be continuing our walk down the road with Jesus. We've been walking down the road to Jerusalem with Jesus and his disciples for the past few weeks. He's been teaching us, we've met a few people in the towns that we've passed, and as for you, I don't know if you've been walking with Jesus for a while or if you've just started on the journey or if you're not really sure that you want to start on the journey. But as we walk with Jesus this morning, I hope that there's something here that will make you want to keep the conversation going. But jumping right into our passage, we stroll up alongside Jesus and his disciples again, and we have to remember where they're heading. Because Jesus is walking to Jerusalem where he knows that he's heading to the cross, where he's heading to his death. And straight away he reminds us of this. In our first section, the cross, verses 32 to 34. Where he says, "We're going up to Jerusalem, the Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death. Then they will hand him over to the Gentiles, and they will mock him, spit on him, flog him, and kill him, and after 3 days he will rise." Now if this seems familiar, it's because it's now the third time that Jesus has said this to them. This is the third time that Jesus has told his disciples that he's heading to his death. But this repetition should say something to us, because the first time that the disciples heard about Jesus' death and resurrection, the first time that they heard the gospel, they were angry. Then the second time that they heard it, they were confused and afraid. And here, the third time that Jesus tells them about his death and resurrection, they're excited, but about the wrong things. They're still blind to who Jesus is and why he came. Which I think should give us some encouragement when we think about sharing the gospel with people around us. If they hear the gospel and are angry or confused or seem to misunderstand it, then they aren't the first ones and they won't be the last. Even some of the earliest leaders in the church went through all of these stages. And so if our friends and family are at any of those stages, it doesn't mean that it's the end of the road for them or for us. Because wherever we are on the road with Jesus, he's going to keep bringing it back to this. He's going to keep reminding us that if we want to know him, we have to start by coming to his cross. Jesus will keep saying to us, "If you want to know me and understand who I am, then you need to understand why I'm going to my death." If you hear that I'm going to die and you feel angry or confused, then maybe you don't get it yet. But it's not the end of the road. There's still time to walk with me and think on it more. But until you get it, until your eyes are opened, he's going to keep bringing it back to this, to the cross, until you understand why he had to die for you. But as for James and John, they're still not quite there yet. They're excited, as we just said, but about the wrong things. They're still blind to who Jesus is. They're still longing for their own glory. Which is our second section, longing for glory, verses 35 to 45. Where it says, "James and John, they approached Jesus and said, 'Teacher, we want you to do whatever we ask you.'" Well, yeah, I remember you've mentioned that before about how you're heading to Jerusalem to die. So I'm just wondering, can you do us a favor? Can you let us sit at your right and your left in your glory? These are the same guys who were up on the mountain with Jesus as he transfigured. So maybe they got some ideas up there. They saw Jesus glowing and thought, "That looks pretty cool. I wonder if we could do that." But Jesus, he's just said to them, "The first will be last, and the last first." And I honestly don't know if it's possible to misapply this teaching more. The Lord of the universe is walking beside you, and he tells you of how he's going to die for you, and your first thought is, "I wonder what I can get out of this." Jesus, he had every right to give them a clip around the ears here, but instead, showing incredible patience with them, he just gently corrects them instead. He says to them, "You guys don't know what you're asking for. Can you drink the cup that I drink or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with?" So what is this cup and what is this baptism? Well, they're two angles on talking about the same thing. They're both, again, talking about his death. The cup of God's wrath that he will drink on behalf of sinners like you and me, and the baptism into death on our behalf, so that if we trust in Jesus, we can walk in newness of life. But Jesus, he just says to them, "You don't know what you're asking for. I actually can't give you what I want, even if I wanted to." But that doesn't mean that James and John have gotten away with it, because we hear the other lads have gotten back, and they hear about what James and John have just asked Jesus in private, and they're ropeable. And while the passage doesn't really say why, we can only assume it's because they've just spoken to Jesus on their own, asking if they can be promoted to being alphas in this wolf pack. And so they're just about to get into fisticuff, it sounds like. But before it gets too out of hand, Jesus, he cuts it all off, he calls them all over, and he says to them, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those in high position act as tyrants over them, but that is not so among you." There's been a lot of talk in our culture about this idea of toxic power and toxic leadership, and here Jesus, he shows us that it's not really a new idea. Leaders, they've been using their power to control and manipulate people for thousands of years, but Jesus, he shows us the better way of using our power to serve those under us, to sacrifice every advantage and privilege that we have to bless them, because that's the way of his kingdom. He sums it up in one of the most famous passages in the New Testament, where he says, "Whoever wants to be great among you will be your servant, and whoever wants to be first among you will be a slave to all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." In Jesus' kingdom, love is power. Giving up your time or energy or possessions or status for the sake of blessing others, that is true power in the kingdom of Jesus. The more that we die to ourselves for the sake of others, the more that we're following our King. And even if it looks like weakness, that is true power. Jesus is saying, if you seek glory in this life, then you won't get it, at least not in my kingdom. You can't seek glory and seek me. But seeking glory doesn't necessarily have to look like us praying every night to be able to sit at Jesus' right and left in his glory. I think often it can be a lot more subtle for us. I think we all learn in some ways to put on an image to try and look just a little bit glorious. It's not that hard to look like you care, to do just enough to look servant-hearted, to know the right answers in Bible study, when you know that your heart is actually quite far from all of those. So if this is an area that God is highlighting for you this morning, what are those ways where you are tempted to speak and act in the good Christian way? When you know that there are things going on for you that you're hiding and your heart isn't right? Because Jesus, he's not calling us to look good enough to fool people. He's calling us to live openly before him and others and depend on his mercy for everything. Because the Christian life is one of humble honesty about our failings, of asking Christ for mercy, not of maintaining a pretense of faith. But if you walk the low road of humble sacrifice and love for Christ's sake, you will be glorified as you follow in the footsteps of Jesus. As Jesus shows us over and over again, in his kingdom those who are great will be brought low, and those who are low will be raised up. But if this story tells us anything, it's that when our hearts don't grasp the gospel, or when we aren't living in the gospel, our hearts naturally gravitate to making more of ourselves. Of thinking, how can I make them think really highly of me? How can I feel really good about myself? Which aren't always bad questions, but I think we all know that when they take over and control our lives, that's never going to end well. When I was in high school, believe it or not, my dream was to become a writer-director, to make a movie. I actually even wrote a screenplay when I was 16. And it's kind of embarrassing, but in my quiet moments, my mind often drifted to the billboards, to the glowing reviews that the film would receive. But actually, the first time that anyone read this screenplay, it was one of my lecturers at uni. He read the opening and he said, "I'm sorry, but it's really not great." And I was devastated. All of my dreams of people loving it, of it becoming the next great film, they were suddenly shattered. And I didn't realize it at the time, but this movie had become more than just a pet project to me. It had become my road to glory. But God, he graciously gave me a detour from that, and since I became a Christian, which was a couple of years later, that pride, of course, it's still been a struggle for me, but at least I can see that now. I can see when I catch myself dreaming of people saying good things about me, and I can tell that's actually not a good sign. As a Christian, I've had to learn time and time again that following Jesus never means seeking glory for ourselves, that the way of Jesus' kingdom is always to focus on those outside of ourselves, to see those who need love, and to seek to love them, to raise them up for his sake, which is exactly what Jesus shows us in this final scene. Longing for mercy, our final section, verses 46 to 52. We read, as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples and a large crowd, Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the road. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." The first thing we hear is that they came to Jericho, which is very close to Jerusalem, which means that it's getting very close to them being at the very end of their journey. So this is the absolute last stop before they get to Jerusalem. And we hear that there's a blind beggar named Bartimaeus. And out of all the people that Jesus healed, he's the only person we actually get the name of. So even based on just that, we're already clued in that there's something pretty important about this encounter. Bartimaeus, he spent his life sitting by the road, begging for help. And sitting by the side of the road, he's heard some people walking past talking about how Jesus has come into town. He sat waiting for days and hoping for Jesus to walk past him. This man who's asked so much from so many people for so many years, who's used to getting mocked and ignored, he's sitting and waiting. And then when he hears a crowd coming, he hears someone say Jesus' name and he begins to cry out, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." And everyone just tells him to shut up. It says many warned him to keep quiet, but he was crying out all the more, "Have mercy on me, son of David." This nobody sitting by the side of the road asking Jesus for something. How embarrassing. He's begging Jesus for help. We don't ask Jesus for anything except to sit at his right and his left in his glory, but that's fine. To this man who everyone else is ignoring or disregarding Jesus, he stops and he sees him. Because in Jesus' kingdom, interruptions to love someone in need aren't actually interruptions. There was one day when I was catching up with a friend in the city. He's a really godly guy. We were walking through the city in front of the Treasury Casino, and there was a woman who was obviously doing it a bit tough, sitting in front of the steps. And he suddenly stopped, and he sat next to her. I didn't know what to do, to be honest. And unfortunately, my first thought was, what on earth is he doing? I just watched him ask her how she's going, how her day had been. She obviously wasn't in a very healthy state mentally, but he just got up and we kept walking. And I have no idea what she thought or felt about that very short conversation, but in that moment he saw someone I never would have seen, and he had time for her, even in the simplest of ways. And I've always remembered that moment of that being such a Jesus-like thing to do. Because it can be very inconvenient, loving people. But as we've just heard, that's what Jesus' kingdom is like. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. So who are those people for you at the moment? People who are in need of love around you? Whether it's the elderly, or people from overseas, or neighbours, particularly at the moment when there are so many people in need because of the flood situation, or people who are just lonely, or people who are going through a painful season at the moment, who are the people you can be making more time and space for in your life who really need a bit of love? Because as Jesus shows us, there's always time in his kingdom to love those who need it most. So they called the blind man and said to him, "Have courage, get up, he's calling for you." He threw off his coat, jumped up and came to Jesus. Then Jesus answered him, "What do you want me to do for you?" It's the exact same question that he just asked his disciples. But where his disciples only asked for their own benefit, Bartimaeus, he actually seems to get it. He seems to get who Jesus is and why Jesus came. "Rabboni," the blind man said to him, "I want to see." Jesus said to him, "Go, your faith has saved you." Where the disciples only asked for their own glory, their own self-centered desires, Bartimaeus, he asked Jesus to have mercy on him. And if you know Jesus, one prayer he's always going to answer is, "Have mercy on me." In chapter 8, we saw a blind man who was healed in two movements. After Jesus healed him once, he could see, but he saw men as trees walking. Then after Jesus healed him again, he could see clearly. But here, there's no stutter to it. Jesus heals Bartimaeus to see clearly, immediately. And at this point in the story, I think that's saying to us that we're meant to see Jesus clearly too, now that he's almost arrived at the cross. Because ironically, the blind man, he's actually the least blind person in this entire story. He gets it. He knows that when he comes to Jesus, he needs to ask for mercy, which the disciples, they couldn't see, because they just wanted to step straight into glory with Jesus. But the reality is, if we want to know Jesus, we need to know him through his cross. Martin Luther, he was one of the big eggs in church history, and one of his big ideas was just this, the difference between the theology of glory and the theology of the cross. The idea that we can't just map on our lives and our experiences onto God to understand him, and we can't just step right into his glory, but the only way that we can access and know God is through the cross of Christ. So if you're on the road with Jesus and you're feeling like you don't really know where to go, or if you're feeling far from God, this is where you need to go, because this is where Jesus was heading on the road. You need to go to the cross, and you will find a way to God there. You will find God's mercy there. And by the end of the story, Bartimaeus, he gets this. The last line says, immediately he could see, and he began to follow Jesus on the road. So not only is he the only person Jesus healed we actually know the name of, not only was his sight healed immediately, not in two movements, but he's one of the only people who Jesus heals who actually follows him on the road on the way to the cross. Which has to ask us the question, are we going to join him? When we hear about Jesus and who he is and where he's heading, do we want to follow him, or do we want to run away as fast as possible? Do we want to follow Jesus on this low road of love and mercy on the way to the cross? Because as we walk with Jesus, he's going to keep calling out to us. He's going to keep speaking the message of the gospel and asking us to trust our lives to it. He's going to keep coming back to his death and resurrection until the penny drops and until our eyes are opened, until we can see and begin to follow Jesus on the road, just like Bartimaeus with our eyes set on the cross as well. So whether you've been on the journey for a while, or if you're just starting out taking the first hesitant steps to follow Jesus, or if you're not quite sure if you want to make that journey yet, this is where we need to go. Back to his cross, where he gave his life as a ransom for our sake. So I'm going to give you a minute now to pray wherever you're at, to ask God what you need to ask, to ask him to help you to know his mercy, to ask you to draw near to Christ. Whatever you need to say to God, I'm going to give you a minute to ask that now, then I'm going to pray to wrap up. Heavenly Father, wherever each of us is at this morning, please help us on our walk. Father, have mercy on us and open our eyes to see Jesus beside us and at work in our lives. Help us to make less of ourselves in our minds and our hearts so that we can make more of Jesus. And help open our eyes to those around us who do need love. For Jesus' sake, Lord. Amen.